Hi, welcome to a special episode of Together Equal, Diversity Made Simple, hosted by me, Kentaro Oe. We'll be talking to guests about how they're working towards making the world more diverse, equal, and inclusive. In today's episode, we're putting a special spotlight on Ally Inclusion Day and discussing how we can embrace diversity, celebrate differences, and foster a sense of belonging for everyone. I'm pleased to introduce today's special guest, Katie Howell. Katie is currently the CEO at Immediate Future, an independent social media marketing agency. She's also a board advisor at Together Equal, an organization that aims to create equality for all by creating conversations that build and challenge awareness of the inequalities prevalent in society today. Katie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Before we get started, Katie, can you tell us a bit more about yourself, just what you're about? Love to hear both your experiences at Media Future and Together Equal, and how, if that all ties together, how that looks.
Well, I have been in marketing 30 plus years, running Immediate Future as a social media agency for this May will be 20 years, and really finding that the ad industry has changed a huge amount. The marketing industry has changed a huge amount, but not enough and not fast enough. And I think this really came to light in the process of BLM coming into fore. And I think that one of the really interesting parts is that then my move to support and help the Together Equal board is really about looking at how, not only within marketing organizations, but beyond that, we can do more to actually action change in the workforce.
I love that. I definitely want to kind of dive deeper, especially into some of the things we can take action on and help improve. But I kind of want to just start like broad strokes in terms of allyship and what ally is. Can you just talk to us about, for you and your definition, what does being an ally mean to you?
Oh, gosh. And do you know what? Can I be really honest with you?
Please.
It's a really evolving term, this, for me. So a few years ago, when Brexit was all, you know, out there and we were all debating whether or not we were going to stay or go, I was getting onto a train at Waterloo and a man said, swore at me and used the P word. I won't go into much detail, but I am of Indian descent. And there is often a slur used with that colour of skin. And it was really, what was really interesting is afterwards, was when I was walking home, I was thinking, it was really interesting how no one stood up at all. And I had to somewhat melt into the background quickly because he was quite aggressive. And then on the way home, I began to think about this and thought, why would nobody else step up? They could see I was alone. They could see I was vulnerable. It was a busy train. There were plenty of people there. And I thought, well, because I think a lot of people don't know what to say or what to do in that situation. The man concerned was quite aggressive. Maybe not everybody felt comfortable with that. And I began to think a lot more about what allyship means. And then we get to that period where BLM became more rife, and certainly within the marketing industry, everybody talked about Black Lives Matters and policies went into place. But the problem again then is that when we look at allyship, apart from a policy, there is very little that's actually done. Do you know what I mean? There's very little that is in aid of helping you when you don't know what to say. Yeah. And so allyship is more than just standing up for someone. It's wider and broader than that. It's about having empathy and being able to see somebody else's point of view. And obviously my perspective is very much that of a woman of color. However, recently we had someone with a disability talk to us about being unable to talk to us because being fearful of expressing their opinions, and really we needed a more official ally in that case, an advocate for that person. So I am learning every day what allyship really means. But for me, it's definitely much more of an active thing than a policy or a stationary kind of, I'm an ally. And it's more than putting a badge on your social media profile. I think it also is incumbent on all of us who are allies, and we are all allies, is to educate ourselves, because this is part of how you understand what matters to you. So educating yourself and educating others. So standing up and saying, actually, I don't think this is right. So there is the bit which is amplifying voices and defending and supporting those that are in awkward or difficult situations. But sure, there is definitely a greater need for empathy. And I suspect I shall use that word quite a lot, because it's a word that has shrunk into the background in recent years. And I think it's a really important part of allyship.
Definitely. Well, thanks for sharing that story with us. I think that's very impactful. It sounds like a traumatic experience. I'm sure there's a level of bystander effect going on, but at the same time, I think it is kind of what you said, right? It's not just policies, you know, that could seem performative in a way, and it's more of a constant actionable thing. And I kind of want to use that as part of my next question, and just in terms of, you know, the work you're doing at Together Equal, that's, you know, starting difficult questions or conversations and asking difficult questions. I'm curious what specific things, like what does your current work look like with them, with that organization, and how's the deal in terms of allyship?
So in terms of the work that I do with Together Equal is predominantly advisory. But the reason I was very drawn to the organization is because of this sparking conversation, the easiest way to understand someone else is to have a conversation with them, is to understand their perspective. And you know, and I'm no spring chicken. And as you get older, one of the wonderful things is you become less defensive of your own id, you know, and become more interested in everybody else around you. And I think one of the beautiful things about starting in conversations with employees around what can be quite difficult conversations, is you get to hear the different perspectives, the different points of view. And we regardless of generational differences, we have so many, and many of us, like us at Immediate Future, are an international workforce. And so we also have cultural differences. And it's about having that respectful engagement that has really drawn me to what Together Equal doing, because I think most organizations don't know how to start that conversation. Sure. So in terms of how I help, is obviously I am helping and supporting in the marketing, which is my set of skill sets. But I think what's more important is what's drawn me to wanting to do this, which is it's really doing, as you rightly say, lifting the policy off the page and actually getting us to think a little bit more about what we say, how we say it, and learn how to be better allies.
I see. That's very interesting. I think lifting it off the policy, I think, like, that key phrase, I think is what we want, right? Because we can see something happen, whether it's Black Lives Matter or anything that's kind of happening in the news, and react to it, because if you don't, you look bad, right? So I think there's an aspect of that. But what, I guess, like, in terms of, like, taking that a step further and enacting change, I'm curious, like, have you seen any kind of, like, challenges in terms of hurdles of, you know, companies that are maybe resistant to it, or maybe they're just kind of ignorant to it? Like, have you had any examples like that where that's been kind of tricky to convince someone why this is such a necessary thing?
I think yes, but it's not where you think it is. There's the obvious. Yeah, there's companies that are like, well, you know what, we've just got to make business happen, and I'm not really worried about anything else. But actually, where there's a bigger challenge, I think, is the cultural shift and change that needs to happen within organizations, which isn't something that's easy to change.
Right.
Let me give you a really positive example. I have been to and done lots and lots of diversity days, diversity weeks, spoken on many panels. And it's really interesting that the audience listening is predominantly of that diversity character, or carrying those characteristics. What you don't see are people outside of that coming to hear. Mm-hmm. And when we are unable to share stories with people across a diverse audience, and only sharing with those with the same challenges and issues that we have, then we become an echo chamber. And this is superbly frustrating. So the shift that needs to happen is not necessarily just about resistance to change, but it's also about a cultural shift that needs to happen within organizations, an opening where people can talk about microaggressions or can discuss the challenges that they think they have. You could just, for instance, open up a conversation in advance of hiring as to how your staff would feel about unisex toilets. You know, having the conversation gets you to understand where you need to position yourselves, get people to understand a different point of view. And I know that sounds so obvious given that we're talking about conversations and I'm talking about empathy and feeling what other people, but it's really important that everybody gets heard. And for me, that is the really important part of the important change that needs to happen, because it just is not going to happen if all we do is set out rules or pretend it'll go away.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, I think it's what you said, you know, just in terms of making sure everyone's heard, hearing the stories that oftentimes get buried or they just don't even have the platform to speak on it. I think that's super important to kind of maintain. I guess in terms of, you know, speaking more about businesses and what business leaders can do, I think a lot of times with policies where they do enact it and for a short while, maybe there's a difference, maybe there's a positive change that kind of comes out of it. But is there a way where we can kind of maybe go a step further and kind of see, is there a way to like hold them accountable? Is there a measure of success? I know it's a very abstract concept, but I'm curious if you have any experience of, you know, like, is there a way to like follow up and be like, okay, you said you're going to do this. It seems like you did, but how's this going a year later?
Yes, yes. And of course there is. There's accountability on actions that you want employees to take. Mm-hmm. But there's kind of twofold element in my view, and this is very personal, which is that, you know, we have all these quotas and they still don't elicit much change ultimately, because actually it's much, much more fundamental than that. And so much better than that is about, you know, surveys of your employees to see whether or not their perspectives have changed, if they are enjoying a better work environment. And a lot of it is down to the fact that work culture is very central now to people's lives. There's so much uncertainty out there that we are hanging quite a lot of our, you know, bearing in mind most of us spend 40 plus hours a week at work. Right. I'm not surprised it's happening. Is that what we don't do is have enough time building our culture. And building a culture is not a, you know, do it once and it's all fine. It's one of those things that's constantly evolving and learning new ways, learning better ways to talk to someone or to discuss things or language that is inappropriate that you might not consider as inappropriate. Mm-hmm. It might not occur to you. All of these things come as an evolution. And that is really where the fundamental change happens. And this is really where the benefit to the organization really happens. There's the policies, absolutely, and with ESG becoming more dominant, particularly for publicly listed companies, that it's really important that companies are able to show a change in performance, whether or not they're ESG or B Corp or whatever it is they're doing. There are a number of key markers that are very clear and very well known as to what testifies to change. Mm-hmm. But if you really want to benefit as an organization, the beauty of creating a culture where there is a great deal more openness and there is an ability to learn for everybody, from the leaders all the way down to the newbies who've just joined the business, is that if you are able to keep learning about different cultures, different ways of approaching things, different perspectives, then your culture will keep evolving. And that also results in happier workforce, productive workforce, longevity and service, all of these things, which really make a difference to the bottom line.
Definitely.
So, but that happens beyond the quotas. And that happens because discussions are allowed to happen.
Sure, definitely. I think it's important, right, to sense a foster of belonging. And I think a lot of times when you ask a person who's been at a company for a long time, like, sometimes it's not even the work, it's just the people around them and the relationships that they can build. So I think, you know, that speaks to a positive culture and in the sense of allyship, of just understanding. And if you see by example leaders that are willing to talk and have conversations about these types of topics, I do think that can kind of make a lasting impact to the rest of the organization as well. I'm curious, you know, we're talking a lot about the organizational level business leaders, policies. Kind of want to whittle it down to just the individual, you know, just someone who wants to become an ally or maybe just doesn't know like what they can do, like on a day-to-day basis. What can people do to really become allies and take a part of that?
And I think this is a very challenging part of the reason when I was talking to people about, the challenges of allyship. We kind of assume that if you say you're an ally for, for Black Lives Matter, say, for instance, if you say you're an ally for people of color, then that's kind of it. Nobody ever accepts that that requires you to understand what you can and can't say, what is relevant, what matters to the person that you're talking to who might be of color. How do they want to be approached? And not every person of color wants to explain to everybody else why something is racism and why isn't. They don't want to, move into activist mode at every single conversation. So it's a real, I think that being an ally is a really difficult position. It's a balancing act where you're balancing on a very wobbly ball. It's just there is because it's you're not sure what you should say, and you're not sure if you should say something. You want to be supportive, but you don't know how, and there's nobody teaching you how to be supportive. So I think we allies have been a largely ignored part of the change that needs to happen. And I think also very largely an uncelebrated part of society. And we need to be celebrating those that are open-minded and want to look at the world in a different way, who are prepared to stand up and understand that when somebody is getting upset at having to call someone they them, knows how to approach that. And we don't do anything to help people know what to say. So it needs understanding on both parts. It needs us to go find a middle ground that we can work on, which is sometimes allies may say something that isn't right. But that's okay. You don't need to sort of move into aggressor mode on everything. And sometimes allies need to ask more questions. And sometimes those people around them need to be able to answer them so that we can educate each other. But I do feel like there's a bit of unpacking to do over the next few years of what allyship means and how we can help people be better allies.
Definitely. And I think I did want to ask because I think this episode, especially in this case, we're leading up to Ally Inclusion Day. And I'm very just curious how that got started. I mean, I can kind of hear in your recent answer, just in terms of, some of the hurdles in my face. It's a wobbly ball. Like you said, it's very difficult to find your position, but dedicating a whole day and celebrating that, I'm just curious, how did that get started?
Well, going back to that story, which is I felt that I do a lot of speaking on D&I in echo chambers. And so having had a conversation with the others at Together Equal, I was really quite vociferous that this is great and it's lovely that we're all hearing stories, but they're all stories we can relate to because they've all happened to us, because we're in that same gang group, whether it's, LGBTQ, or whether it's female founders, or it's women of color, or in technology, all of these things. Well, it's great. It's lovely that we're all, but there's nobody else there. Nobody else listening to these stories. So part of Ally Inclusion Day was to start. I wanted to start. I was really keen that we started a big movement which looked and helped allies to be better allies and to celebrate those that are great allies. To show this is the way forward. This is what a role model looks like. This is what people who are good allies do. These are the discussions that we should be having. So the purpose of Ally Inclusion Day is to get people talking, because that's the thing we're not doing. We're doing an awful lot of putting our rainbows on our social media profiles. What we're not doing is having proper conversations. Not just amongst ourselves, of those of us in that diversity sector, but those of us outside. We're not having that conversation that explains this is why they and them and matters to some people. This is why this kind of language is offensive. This is why this can be seen as a microaggression. All of these things we need to explain to people in more detail why we need to help them see it, if you see what I mean. And that really is part of this, which is let's get the conversation started.
Definitely. I think that's a great resource as well, if anything, because I think certain people, especially you know, that are kind of stuck in echo chambers, whether it is the minority group or not, I think can find it difficult to like even find someone of another group or that to be able to have these conversations. And if there is some kind of resource, whether you could just read about it or watch videos or listen to speeches, you know, I think there's a lot that can be done, whether it's even if it's not a direct conversation. I think that's something that's important and necessary to have to kind of push this along for sure. I'm curious, so it seems like it's a relatively new thing, right? Ally Inclusion Day. I'm curious, you know, down the line, 2 years, 5 years, like what do you hope this day and the movement kind of accomplishes?
I hope that it becomes that rather than, I mean, there's so many national days. There's like a national cookie day. There's a national blah, blah, blah. I would really love this just to be a day where, which is much more like, say, something like Earth Day, where an action happens out of it. The action being not that we put a badge on something, but that we have a dedicated amount of time on this day where we have a conversation. We get a group together, we grab some biscuits and have a conversation about inclusivity at work. It could be any kind of conversation in any direction. We can pick different ones, but it's to kick off those conversations. It doesn't have to be a really meaty subject. As I said, it could be talking about whether a toilet should be unisex. It could be very, very small, or it could be massive. It could be a really big conversation about changing bias during the hiring process. Whatever this is, whatever this discussion is, that in small ish groups, well, so that everybody has a voice, we get to know each other and we get to understand the different perspectives that we have, which I think is something we desperately need to do post-COVID anyway, which is start to look at the world through everybody else's eyes and not just our own. You know,
Definitely.
I sound like a total hippie now, but if we're going to change, my view is we're going to make the change, we are going to have to do it together.
Definitely.
It's just not going to be done in little mini groups of different people coming with different views.
Definitely. That's great. Yeah, I think it's the general involvement, right? I think that's kind of what we're looking for.
Yes.
And I personally hope that it becomes larger and larger, and we can kind of, you know, push the needle and kind of change how perspectives are changed.
Yes.
I'm curious, you know, you mentioned for I think it was an example that you mentioned just now, maybe something like removing bias in a hiring process. I'm curious, do you see any kind of themes of whether it's bias in that sense or just general like hurdles that you see regarding the challenges of being an ally in the workplace? Is there kind of like something, whether it's you know, difficult conversations that happen via microaggressions. Are there any things like that that you kind of see throughout your time?
Yes. It's really sad. Microaggressions are huge, I would say. They're a really big part of anyone who's from that intersectionality of our community suffers some form of microaggression. And it can be very wearing. It's interesting that when I talked about the train incident, you said, you know, you must have been shocked. And I thought to myself, no. Do you know what I mean? 50 plus years of dealing with this means that I tend to shrug quite a large amount of it off because it's happened. So yes, we all have bias. All of us do. I am certainly not a saint. I have to restructure and rethink how I say things. The language that was appropriate for me growing up in the 80s and the 90s in the noughties is just not appropriate anymore. I don't know if you ever watch any old films, you know, films from the 80s. And oh my gosh, you're sitting there cringing. I mean, it's bad enough that they're all smoking everywhere. But you sit there going, oh my God, you can't say that.
Yeah,
And that's
it
what
is
I mean.
challenging.
Yeah, we've all got to learn. So it's part of that process. And I get that. But there are some, apart from the real horror stories, and it's easy to focus on the horror stories. The newspapers like the horror stories. But actually, every single day, there's the small things. And when we talk about bias in recruitment, I also want to talk about bias in, you know, obviously the pay gap, but also in promotions and the challenges specifically that women face, as well as those from other minorities, but specifically those sort of glass ceilings that still are there, as we know. So we do have that. And the other side of it is this, which is it's just kind of part of the whole challenge, which we've kind of mentioned quite a lot at the beginning, which is the policy. So lots of organizations have great policies. They report beautifully their impact reports and but it's not felt at the bottom line. It's not understood. There's almost a challenge in how we communicate to our colleagues and our staff about the topic of diversity. We're so frightened of saying the wrong thing that we say nothing at all. And I think this is, and I don't know what the straightforward answer is. Maybe some of these discussions will help that. And if anybody's got any ideas, they can throw them in the podcast comments. I'd love to know.
Please.
But it's just one of those things where you kind of go, we have to find a way of having uncomfortable conversations and not worrying too much that the thing we say then, as long as we're not being complete idiots, you know, but is not feeling so uncomfortable. Because I feel like quite often a lot of what goes on in diversity is done in a very corporate-y way.
Mm.
But in reality, we are just human beings. And actually, come down and talk to us, come and sit alongside us and have those, and tell us what you're doing. It would be super interesting. So I think there's that. And also about encouraging individual actions, individuals to share their stories. I mean, we talked at the beginning of this podcast about empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And a very good friend of mine runs an empathy day, which is all around encouraging children to read more, because when we read more, we kind of walk in someone else's shoes. We begin to see the other perspective. And I always think it's the same principle in our working lives, that if we listen to more stories, listen to that story, that journey that somebody else has had, that experience somebody else has had, that you begin to you naturally will develop empathy because you're listening to the story. So I think storytelling is a massive part of what we need to do in our communications.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I agree. I think it's, you know, one gripping story, and I think it can definitely make a lasting impact. You know, you remember the details of it, the struggles that they went through. And like you said, we're all human beings. I think we can kind of understand emotions. We can put ourselves in other people's shoes. And sometimes you're right. That's all it takes to kind of at least turn that switch of like, oh, that's maybe that wasn't right. At the beginning, when you joined, you were kind of alluding to maybe like our collective industry, right? Marketing, advertising, social media. Maybe we're not as evolving as quickly as we should be. Definitely not. I'm curious what are the outages? Like what are we not doing that maybe some other industries are or some other companies are? What are your thoughts there?
I think it's very easy. It's very easy to pay lip service to diversity, and marketers know how to do that well, make it sound good. I also think that there is an element of this is what I know. Having a more diverse, this is what I know, this is what I like, this is what I understand, and marketing moves at pace. There isn't much time for helping people out. But if you want, for instance, let me give you an example. In marketing, if you want to hire someone who's neurodiverse, you may have to change your operational process.
Mm.
I know this because we have some hires at Immediate Future who aren't diverse in that particular way. You have to change something because otherwise that person can't operate. And that is the point of inclusivity. And I think that is probably one of the bigger challenges in marketing, is that you're moving at 100 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Everything is going. And for those of us agency side, it's even triple the movement. So it's I think that's one of the challenges, but it's not the excuse. It's a challenge, sure, but it's not the excuse. But yes, the marketing industry is pretty homogenous. And I've been I'm gradually, as you get older, you can gradually get ruder. I'm getting ruder and ruder about it because I haven't got the patience to wait 20 years, 50 years for this industry to change.
Mm.
And we have to change our working practices. We need to be supporting those that we should get in the industry. And I can tell you from social media's perspective, you need a social media agency that has a diverse workforce because they are speaking to a diverse audience.
Right.
You cannot have a homogenous middle class, blah, 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 audience, marketeer talking to an audience that might not be that person, because it's much, much closer than maybe creating a TV ad or a TV commercial. You are up against the customer really close. And that bit I am very vociferous about, because I feel that our agencies should reflect the audiences we are targeting.
Definitely.
It doesn't need to be exactly the same, but it should reflect that. And it's one of the reasons why our industry has suffered from ageism, racism, all forms of sexism. And you can see it in some of the ads.
Mm.
You can see it in some of the campaigns. You can see it in the marketing that doesn't speak to, this group or that group. They're targeting older women with all the wrong things because older women don't see themselves like that, or they're targeting people of a particular culture, but they don't see themselves that because we do not have a diverse workforce. So I think, you can probably hear my frustration.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Because I feel like this is an industry that should do so much better. We should do better.
Agreed.
We're at the front end. We should be better than this.
Agreed. I think the industry itself, whether it's advertising, marketing, it's reflective of the culture. So in a way, it seems almost backwards that a culture that is supposed to reflect the what is latest in popular culture, or just culture in general, that isn't reflecting it accurately or in a false light. It seems like an oxymoron in a way of just, hey, why don't we hire the right people or try to be more representative and to kind of not talk amongst ourselves. So yeah, I personally would love to see more of that as well. I think that's, when you're running campaigns that just sound tone deaf or just don't have the right research behind it, I think can really hit it in a negative way. So can do more damage than good. I just kind of want to wrap this up and just ask you, I think we talked a lot about the oncoming changes, what we really need to do, opening up conversations and being comfortable asking questions, difficult questions. Obviously there's many hurdles to still come past and hurdles to jump, but I'm curious, what are you most excited about just in terms of allyship and the direction it's headed? Obviously with the context of Ally Inclusion Day this year coming up, but I'm just curious, what are you most excited about?
Well, I guess two things. One, of course, I want to see change. That's ultimately what I'd like. One person's life is changed by this, that would be fabulous. One company changed by this, that would be awesome. Lots of change, fabulous. But also from a personal point of view, there's another element to this, which is the joy of discovering other people's journeys and stories, which is a lot of pleasure, in hearing different perspectives and understanding and hearing other people's points of view. And I am hoping, for instance, this year that it will help me be a better leader, because I will understand what it's like, for those coming into the industry in, 2024. What is it like compared to when I did back in the 80s, So I want to understand better. So I'm looking forward to that. For me, that makes my work life very interesting.
Amazing. Well, I just want to thank you so much for joining us today, but also just all the work that you're doing. I think it's going to make tangible, and it's already making tangible impact. And yeah. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. Thanks so much for your time. And to our listeners, thanks for tuning in, and watch out for our next episode of Together Equal, Diversity Made Simple.